Basketball Talk Podcast. Brett Polakoff here with Kurt Helam. What is going on, Kurt?
Not much, man. I'm just, you know, enjoying spring here. I know the funny thing is, I think for most of the country, that really matters. Like, you can go outside again and barbecue, and the winter's over. And, you know, we live in these places where we're like, wow, I guess it's getting warmer.
Yeah, it was 85 here. I'm based in Phoenix, so it was 85 here earlier this week and sunny. So, you know, we're just happy here. As long as it's under 110, we're pretty good.
Yeah, it's one of the fun things about Phoenix in the summer.
All right, well, let's get right on to it here. Another day, another Lakers injury. We had the Lakers losing in Milwaukee last night. They actually had a double-digit lead in the first half of this game. But, you know, as usual, there are too many turnovers for a team that's near the bottom of the league in that category. Horrific perimeter defense, horrific transition defense. Bucks end up with a double-digit victory. A couple injury updates for the Lakers. So Steve Nash basically left the game with about 5 minutes to go in the third quarter, did not return. Supposedly he wanted to come back in, was characterized afterwards as a hip spasm, but supposedly his hamstring was bothering him also. You know, he's set to be ready to go on Saturday, but it's not good if you got, you know, your starting point guard who can't finish the game. Then we find out afterwards that Kobe Bryant is dealing with a bone spur in his foot, and he's going to be reevaluated or examined to see the extent of that injury. Is it just too much at this point for the Lakers to overcome? They already lost Meta World Peace earlier the week. He's out for 6 weeks, which obviously means the season, if you're the Lakers, right? I mean, nobody's expecting them to make it to the finals. Is it just too much at this point from an injury standpoint for the Lakers to overcome?
It might be. I mean, we'll see how bad Kobe's is. The thing about bone spurs is it's not something that gets worse per se. I mean, it's not something, and that's kind of always been Kobe's rule on injuries. Is it going to make it worse? Is there going to be more permanent damage if I play through it? Or is it just a matter of pain tolerance? Because if it's just pain tolerance, he'll go out there. So I think you'll see him out there. The problem is that's, along with the ankle, is another thing that just limits his mobility a little bit. And he's playing fantastically. The problem for the Lakers is he can't just be fantastic. He's got to be exceptional, and he's got to drag some guys along with him for them to win games. And as you have discussed, you were calling this a few weeks ago, the Lakers' last 10 games, their schedule gets brutal at the end. And, I mean, they are tied with the Jazz in the loss column. You know, up until Dallas is ready to shave those beards. They ran into a pretty good Pacers team last night that was scoring for a change.
Yep.
But, you know, they're going to be right in that mix. And suddenly you're like, you know, can the Lakers even make the playoffs is a very legitimate question, where a week or two ago, I thought that they'd be able to stretch it out a little bit, and then they went this through the easy part of their schedule and lost.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about Kobe's injury. Everything he said is absolutely true. We all know his tolerance for pain is very high. He's going to play through any injury as long as it's not going to end his career, and there's no way to make it worse necessarily. However, let's assume that Kobe's going to be fine through the bone spur. Let's assume that Steve Nash, that his latest injury isn't going to bother him. Let's assume that the guys on the floor are going to remain healthy. I know that's going out on a limb, especially this season with these Lakers, but let's assume these guys remain healthy. They still have a ton of issues to work through besides the injuries. They have team defense issues. You know, Kobe, first and foremost, defensively, does not rotate, does not help. He's often caught watching the ball on defense. You know, Dwight Howard says after every single game, he needs help. It's got to be everybody. You know, we all know who he's talking about. I mean, yes, it's Kobe, but it is the whole team. So from a defensive standpoint, they have a lot of problems. They still turn the ball over way too much. And then offensively, we know that Kobe's been trying to do too much recently. And we cannot have, if you're the Lakers, him playing hero ball down the stretch of these games. Dwight Howard is getting almost no touches down the stretch. Steve Nash isn't really involved in creating anything. It's ISO Kobe. That's not going to work. The defense isn't going to work. So even if they remain healthy, they've got to find a way to fix the way that they're playing. And it doesn't seem like the players on the court, namely Kobe, have been necessarily willing to do that.
No, they've got, like you said, their problems are multiple. And it starts with that defense you're talking about to me. It's like they still, through all their offensive problems and through all the woes and all the issues at the end of games, put up a fair number of points per possession. Their offense is fine. Can kill them on transition defense, and they've turned the ball over their last two games. They had, I think it's like 39 turnovers in two games,
yeah.
Something ridiculous. When they're turning the ball over, and then you combine that with their transition defense, they just got run out of the building. They'll lose too many they'll get run out. You know, they too many easy baskets. That's what happened against the Bucks. That's how the Bucks came back. They started getting those easy buckets in transition. The Bucks are a bit of a streaky scoring team too. I mean, as you would expect with Monta Ellis and Brandon Jennings on the roster, like, yeah. they're going to go through streaks where they hit everything and then they're going to turn around and miss everything for a while. I don't even think they win a game against the Heat in the first round, but you know, maybe Monta Ellis has one of those nights. But they're a tough matchup for the Lakers just because they can run. They're running athletic, and I just don't see, even if they make the playoffs, I just can't see the Lakers doing much damage with the holes in their roster. They've got an offseason to plug it in, I think, you know, to make some moves and plug it up, you know, with some more athletic players, somebody who can play wing defense, like you said. I mean, part of it is that Dwight Howard's not getting a lot of help, but Steve Blake is a traffic cone. And now Dwight Howard's got to leave his man, and Dwight Howard's man's, you know, and then cuts to the basket. There's real easy ways to expose this Laker defense, and until they fix that and the transition defense, you know, they've got a lot, you know, I don't think they can solve their problems that simply.
Well, and then, you know, as we're looking at the schedule, so it's pretty much going to be the Lakers, Dallas, or Utah. One of those teams is going to get that final playoff spot. As you're looking at the Lakers' schedule, really, the next game that they play is at Sacramento. They've struggled there, you know, a bunch of times. Sacramento has guys that always go nuts on the Lakers. You know, Isaiah Thomas can score. DeMarcus Cousins always has big games. They have enough offensive firepower, especially against this Lakers defense, to cause them some problems. After that, the big, you know, huge game is at home against Dallas on the second. You know, the Lakers have to win that game if they want to make the playoffs. Conversely, if Dallas wants to get in, they need to make it. That's a huge game right there. After that, the Lakers have, you know, one game that you'd characterize as easy, that's like it should be a guaranteed win, which is at home against New Orleans. But before that, they host the Grizzlies, they play the Clippers, they're at Portland. That's never an easy game up at the Rose Garden. And they finish the season at home against the Warriors, the Spurs, and the Rockets. So right now, you'd have to say that I don't see a way that the Lakers are going to win enough of those games to get into the postseason unless Dallas and Utah go on a similar slide.
Well, the thing is, that's why they're partially still in this, is that Utah's, you know, been terrible of late.
Yeah.
Dallas had a ways to come back. You know, I think that they may be the hottest of the three teams right now. I mean, obviously, they lost Thursday night, but again, they lost to Indiana, who's a good team. They might be the team that can drive this, but they've got a couple games to make up. So the other problem for the Lakers in all of this, by the way, is that Utah has the tiebreaker. So the Lakers can't just tie them. They have to beat Utah. They, like I said, there's one game with Dallas, and that will help decide that tiebreaker.
Yeah, and then, you know, looking at Utah's schedule, they play Minnesota twice in the last three games, you know, so if they're truly interested in making that playoff push, that would help them. You know, they finish at Memphis, which, depending on Marc Gasol and how right he is, you know, that could be a tough game. You know, Dallas has some easy ones after a couple of road games. I just think it's going to be tough. But, you know, definitely we'll have to wait and see how the injury to Kobe shakes out. And same thing with Steve Nash. But it's going to be tough for them, I think, at this point to get into the postseason. Mavericks last night, you know, finally came back to earth a little bit. Lost at home to the Pacers by about 25 points. Paul George had a great all-around game for Indiana. Pacers held Dallas to 38% shooting. You know, I don't think not much more to talk about or worry about for Dallas. I think they just ran into a very good Pacers team, and you know, finally their shot, you know, went a little bit cold.
Yeah, exactly. But if you watch them lately, what's really got them going again is Dirk is all the way back.
Yeah,
he was injured early in the season. It clearly took him a while to both trust the knee after surgery. I mean, his first knee surgery, and just to get his conditioning and stuff back. But right now, you know, that ridiculous one-legged, 15-foot unstoppable fadeaway is rainbow thing is just, you know, it falls every time again. And when you have a go-to shot and a go-to move like that and a guy who can score the way Dirk does, you know, that's a good team. And like you said, they're playing better right now. The Pacers, that was a nice win for them. You know, look, they want to get the two seed. They want to have that ability to have the Knicks or the Nets or whoever they're going to face in the second round probably, you know, at home. I still think they very well, even without Granger, they miss his scoring, I still think they might be the second best team in the East. I just think that the drop off right now is so steep in that conference.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no question about that. Last game that we had last night, it was a light night, obviously, with the NCAA tournament, nothing nationally televised, but still just three games on the schedule. So the last game was the Sacramento Kings visiting Phoenix. Surprisingly, I sat that one out. I didn't feel like getting down to the arena for that epic matchup. But Sacramento ended up putting 117 points on the board, easily won by 14. The thing in Phoenix right now that's been going on is the Suns are, quote-unquote, resting Goran Dragic, who doesn't need any rest. He's perfectly healthy. They sat him in a loss two nights ago, and then they sat him last night. You know, initially they tried to play it up as, well, no, he needs some rest. He takes as much punishment as anyone. If you see him after games, he's constantly beat up. You know, he's gonna be playing this summer, you know, in Europe. So, you know, we need to make sure we don't run our, you know, biggest asset into the ground. Meanwhile, he's nowhere near the top ranks of, you know, minutes played. It's not like he's playing for the Bulls and running out there 41 minutes a night. You know, he's fine, you know, and he went on record as saying, he's like, no, if it was up to me, I'd play. This is what you work your whole life for, is to play professional basketball. He's like, I'm fine, I'd like to play. Not in a contentious way, but just in a, hey, if you're asking me, I'd be fine to go out there. Nothing's wrong with me. So then, you know, after the second night, then it came down to, well, no, now it's more of a player development thing. Yeah, we'd like to get Dragic some rest. But, you know, we need to get a look at players like Kendall Marshall and, you know, Deontay Garrett and kind of see what we have for them going forward. We all know what's going on here, right? I mean, the Suns are just blatantly tanking at this point, making sure that they don't win any more games. You know, what are your thoughts on that? Is that what they should be doing at this point in the season?
You know, we're going to have this discussion a lot next year when there's a loaded draft with Wiggins and all these guys. This year, I mean, I guess you can tank a little and try to get a better, you know, odds in the lottery to get a slightly better player. But this is a draft where even the top five guys in the draft, you hope, develop into nice role players. Like, you know, yeah, if Ben McLemore reaches the heights of his game, you know, he does have a street stroke. So, I mean, even if he does everything you kind of hope for him, he might make one or two all-star games over the course of a 12-year career, but mostly he's going to be that third or fourth guy. And that's like a potential number one pick. This is not a deep draft. So if you're going to tank, this isn't necessarily the year to do it. But I do get the idea of they should be giving Kendall a lot more minutes. They should be giving some of the young guys minutes just to see what they've got, or at least leave some tape for the guys who take over for the front office and coaching staff when these guys are gone, so they have something to watch.
No, that's a good idea. You know, why not, right? I mean, why not see what you got in these players? But I just find it funny because, you know, when Lindsey Hunter came in, he was talking about, you know, he wants to turn this into a more of a defensive-oriented team. The Suns have been known forever for their offense and for their up-tempo style of play. But he, you know, Lindsey Hunter said all along since he got the job, he's like, no, we need to be a nasty defensive team. I want to impress that identity on these guys and turn the Suns into that. Well, in two of the last four games, they've given up 117 points to the Kings and the Timberwolves. So, you know, I don't see the defensive identity coming around anytime soon. You know, even before resting Dragic, the lineups that they've been throwing out there have been really random. I mean, anybody watching the Suns, you're just scratching your head going, okay, this is interesting. You know, what's going to happen here? I just don't think there's a plan in place in Phoenix. That's really the only thing I would criticize. I wouldn't criticize him for tanking. I wouldn't criticize him for sitting Dragic in favor of getting Marshall some minutes. I would just criticize the fact that there doesn't appear to be any plan in place going forward.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's ultimately it. I mean, as much as you can be frustrated with in Houston with Daryl Morey over the last few years, you know, or some of these other organizations, like frankly, even Minnesota, there seemed to be more of a plan of getting a superstar and what kind of team they wanted to build than there is in Phoenix, where they're just kind of randomly collecting players.
Well, yeah, that's something we'll keep an eye on for sure, but expect the tanking to continue. And again, not necessarily criticizing that part of it. You know, the league set up with the draft lottery for that exact reason. They know that's going to happen to a certain extent. We would just like to see something more concrete in place moving forward.
Yeah, well, again, wait till next year. We will have multiple tanking discussions because that is a deep draft with franchise-changing guys at the top, probably, you know, assuming they all come out and everybody stays healthy and all that stuff. And there are going to be teams starting at the All-Star break or earlier next year that are just going to pack it in.
Yeah, that's so we can all look forward to that. That's going to be
good basketball.
Yeah, great basketball. So, well, you know, the big story this week was obviously the Miami Heat. They had their winning streak snapped at 27 games by the Chicago Bulls the other night. The Bulls played well, you know, make no mistake, but, you know, they were missing some guys. It probably was really more than anything just a time for the streak to come to its natural conclusion. 27 straight is the second longest winning streak in NBA history. I don't know if the Heat are necessarily crying over it. I'm sure they would have liked to have seen the streak continue as long as possible and maybe break that record, but they have bigger goals in mind this season.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think the streak ties into their legacy thing, which is where they're kind of starting to look at. You know, if they can win a title this year, that's two in a row, and you start to think, like, how good can they be for how long? And in the same way, like I said a few times on the blog, I think if they had been able to break that record, if they had gotten to 34, we'd talk about, and they won a title this year, we'd talk about this season the same way we kind of talked about the 72-win Bull team. And
that, right.
You know, they were absolutely dominant for that year as part of a dominant era, and I think that that's kind of how they saw this. And look, LeBron James can, you know, he doesn't have the rep, certainly, and he doesn't show the emotion about losing the way like Kobe Bryant does or Kevin Garnett does. He doesn't wear that on his sleeve in the same way. You watch him the last 2 minutes of that game against the Bulls, he wanted that. He couldn't drag his team over the finish line. The Bulls were making plays to their credit. But I think you could see that he really wanted that streak and he wanted part of that. But I think you also hit the nail on it. Look, there's probably going to be a mental relaxation. They'll probably lose, you know. Those 72 Lakers lost 4 of 6 when their streak ended. I think you'll see something similar here. They're going to start resting Wade. He clearly needs more time off to get, you know, get his knee right. Because all of this would be hollow without a ring at the end of it. And that's what they've got to start focusing on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, as far as being one of the dominant teams of the era, I think they would have been in that conversation had they, you know, gone on to win the title as we all sort of expect them to. But again, you know, they're not going to be crying over it. You're absolutely right about LeBron and his competitive drive. He definitely wanted that game. You know, I've been one of those guys that always said, like, Luol Deng, all-star, really? Like, twice now? But he played like it that game. He was knocking down three-pointers. I mean, he really looked like that all-star player that, you know, and again, he gets voted in as a reserve. Well, who votes in the reserves? The coaches. And the coaches obviously know the players better than anybody. So, you know, great win for the Bulls, great atmosphere. You know, Heat aren't going to be exactly crying over it, and I think they'll be just fine. And then, you know, lastly, coming out of that game, Bulls played very physical on LeBron. LeBron, you know, not necessarily whining about it, but did mention, like, hey, you know, those guys, a couple plays, they kind of grabbed me from behind, dragged me down, wasn't really pleased with the physical play. You know, said he expects it to continue and he's fine with it. But, you know, what do we think about LeBron sort of, you know, just bringing up the fact that, you know, hey, these guys are playing a little extra physical on me?
Well, his timing in doing it was poor, I think. You know, I mean, the problem was doing it after the loss rather than complaining about it. Because, look, he does get hit on harder and get people play him physically. And, I think the comparison here is almost Shaq during his peak years, you know, with the Lakers and in Orlando for a while. He took more abuse. Like, teams really tried to foul him, partially to send him to the line. But, I mean, the fouls on him were brutal because a normal foul that would stop Goran Dragic from getting off a shot, LeBron powers through and gets the and one.
Right.
You can't just little bit – you just can't kind of foul him. If you're going to foul him, he's so strong that you know – he's such a bully scorer, too, when he goes to the rim. I mean, he's quick. He gets around guys. I don't want to diminish his skill, but he uses that physicality to get his points. And so, on one hand, it bugs me. He uses that physicality to his advantage. Other teams play him physical. I don't think he can call people out on that. B, I think it's, unfortunately for him, just comes with the territory. If the league wants to change this, then the league has to change it completely. He has to get called for some of those bully rushes where he just runs guys over. You know, those have to be called more as charges. If the league's going to crack down, it's got to be universal. But I personally like some physicality in the game. I don't want it to go back to the 1990s. I don't want, you know, I don't want those Knicks back. I don't want that era of basketball to return. I like the for all of my issues at times with the no hand checking on the perimeter rule and some of this, I like the fact that it's opened the game back up. But there should be some physicality. If you put your head down and drive to the basket, you know, that's a bull move, and you can expect to be met that way.
Well, yeah, and we saw, you know, Kirk Heinrich was on the losing end of one of those, you know, from LeBron in that game. You know, it looked like he almost got whiplashed the way his head smacked back. But, You know, as far as the hard fouls, I don't have a problem with if a defender's in front of a player and the player's going to the basket, or even if he's coming from the side and contesting the shot and he has to, and you know, you have to hit LeBron extra hard on the arm if you want to commit that foul because of his strength. I don't necessarily have a problem with those plays, and I don't see the league needing to do anything to change them. The plays that I have an issue with are on the fast break when guys get out ahead of the pack and, you know, players try to wrap them up just to prevent the easy layup, or tackle them in midair, or, you know, like we saw with Stephen Curry, you know, he just got grabbed in the open court and tweaked his ankle. Those are the type of plays I think the league, I'd like to see them just say, you guys cannot do this because it's an injury risk to our players. Those are the ones that I'd like to see them crack down on. I would even be in favor of a really severe penalty in those situations, something to the effect of maybe 3 shots and the ball out of bounds if you just grab a guy on a fast break, or if you grab him from behind and just pull him down, just to take that completely out of the game, so that, you know, 2 points is a lot easier to swallow than giving up perhaps 6 on a possession. If a guy makes all 3 free throws, they take the ball out and hit another 3. So those are really the only plays I have an issue with. I'm fine with hard fouls as long as the defender's in position, you know, making somewhat of a play on the basketball.
Yeah, exactly. I think making the play on the basketball is key for that there. And you know what? You see this in European and international basketball, and it can get frustrating at times, but I think in some ways it's the safer play, it is the safer play. If you're going to disrupt a fast break, foul the guy at half court. If you realize this is going poorly, and you see it happen all the time in, like I said, international basketball, they'll realize they don't have numbers on the break, and they'll foul the point guard out at half court.
You nailed that exactly. When I was in Italy at Adidas Eurocamp, the very first day that they started the games, I'm like, what is going on? Like, and it's exactly as you described it. They outlet pass. If it was a point guard and one defender, foul at half court. There was zero fast break opportunities allowed. And maybe that's how the league puts in the rule. They say, hey, look, you know, if you need to stop the fast break, if you want to give up the points, you got to do it before the guy crosses half court. Again, is that good for the game, though? You know, are fans going to want to see it, you know, played out the way it's played out in the European game? I'm not so sure, but, you know, like I said, I think they have to do something about those just grabbing guys in the open floor. Players are too fast, too strong, and somebody's going to get hurt, you know, like we already talked about. We saw Stephen Curry be on the wrong end of one of those last week.
Yeah, exactly, and I think you're right. Like you said, if you're playing good defense, if you get your body in position and you can make a play, then that's great. But if you're just tackling people, you know, or from behind and doing stuff, that's the stuff that the league really has to do away with in a player safety capacity.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. Make sure you leave us some comments. Let us know how we're doing. And Kurt, look forward to speaking with you next time.
Talk to you then.